Trade is over for the holiday shortened week, and the grain markets busted the string of mixed price performances with some solid gains. And those gains came despite increases in estimated carryovers of corn, wheat, and soybeans. We're taking a deep dive into the workings of the supply and demand reports.
Live from the grand socialist experiment of 2020 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, everybody, we've got a real treat lined up on report day here. Seth Meyer, ag economist at the University of Missouri FAPRI, will join us. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Yes, thank you so much. As many of you probably know, Seth was, as recently as last fall, was in charge of the supply and demand reports at USDA for the World Ag Outlook Board. He's now down at the University of Missouri working for FAPRI. He's an ag economist down there. And we are going to take a dive into the thought processes that go into the supply and demand report, why changes are made, when they are made, and how, who decides to make those changes. So and obviously when you get the kind of changes like we saw in that corn balance sheet, good grief, Davis. I mean, they took 375 million bushels off of the corn for ethanol number.
That's a big one.
That is a big one. There's no question about it. So what we will do is we'll dive into that and make sure that that we understand why it was done, how it was done, and we'll talk about what's going on in this ethanol market, which is absolutely crazy.
Crazy. We'll sort of peer behind the curtain of these reports with Seth today. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be very insightful.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so. We've talked with Seth before. It's been a while. It was last fall when we were out on the College Roadshow.
Oh, sure.
And, and we had an opportunity to sit down and talk with Seth at that time. He was fresh off the USDA job at that time.
And, yeah, I remember that.
So it should be an interesting conversation with him this morning. I'm looking forward to it. Or this afternoon.
Good deal.
Excuse me. I forgot where I'm at.
I don't know what day it is. I don't even know what day it is, man.
What a day. Yeah. The wind is blowing like crazy. We have gone from sunshine to blizzard, back to sunshine, back to blizzard. It's just been a wild, weird, wacky kind of day.
Yeah, it's been that kind of day. It's you know, it might be a good day to take some time tomorrow.
Yeah, might as well.
Comes none too soon.
You know, that's a good one. We should probably go ahead and put it out there right now, just so that everybody remembers Good Friday is tomorrow and the markets are closed.
That's right. That's right.
All right, let's get to the news. What was moving things around?
Well, Chip, the pendulum of the wheat market swung back to the upside today. That's despite lackluster export sales of just 259,000 metric tons for old crop delivery and just 117,000 tons for new crop delivery. The old crop sales actually were on the top side of trade expectations, but new crop sales fell short of estimates. Despite the 30 million bushel increase in estimated wheat carryover for the 2019-20 marketing year, futures closed at the highs of the week. July hard red winter wheat was 13¾ cents higher, 4.99 even. July soft red gained 9 cents to 5.57½. July spring wheat firm 3½ cents, 5.44 even. Chip,
if that doesn't make you smile, you're dead inside. The music, I love that. Yeah, and you know, the old crop sales that came in there, that we can't ignore the importance of it and the fact that it did come in above trade expectations. July wheat in Chicago, or SRW wheat futures on the week, up 12.5 cents.
Okay.
July HRW wheat futures up 20.5 cents, and spring wheat futures in the July contract up 8.5 cents this week.
All right. All right. Sounds good. Well, corn export sales in the weekend of April 2 were outstanding at nearly 2.46 million metric tons. Of that tally, old crop sales of 1.85 million tons were reported, with new crop sales at nearly 609,000 metric tons. Old crop sales easily topped trade expectations, with new crop sales in line with estimates. The S&D report for corn was a tough one, Chip. USDA slashed 375 million bushels from estimated corn for ethanol use. After an increase in estimated feed and residual use, corn carryover jumped 200 million bushels from last month. May corn futures 1¾ higher at 331¾. July corn firmed 1¼ cents to 336¾. Hey, December corn closed at 350¾. That's up a penny and a half, Chip.
Yeah, okay, on the week, and so that we can get to Oliver here before the end of the segment. Yeah. On the week, May corn up a penny, Dees corn steady. Dees corn was steady on the week.
All right, we'll take that. Soybean export sales in the weekend at April 2 lined up with trade expectations, with old crop sales of more than 523,000 metric tons and new crop sales of just over 353,000 metric tons. Soybean carryover jumped 55 million bushels from last month, with a 50 million bushel cut to estimated bean exports, the featured change on the demand side of the market. May bean futures were 9 cents higher, 863.5. July beans gained 9¼, 871. November bean futures 875¾ today, up 7¾. Chip.
On the week, May beans up 9¼, November beans up 14¼ cents.
All right, let me just run these quick. April live cattle up 117.5 to 94 bucks even. August cattle off $1.45, 90.75, and April feeders slipped 35 cents to 119.52.5. Oh, here, I should mention this. Pork export sales in the weekend at April 2 were outstanding at nearly 56,000 metric tons, Chip, a 47% jump from last month. April lean hogs, 32.5 lower, though, 42.80. July, off 210, 54.75, Chip.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Hey, Oliver, on the week, April live cattle up $5.67.5. April feeder cattle up $11.27.5. And April hogs even saw some gains of $2.57.5. All in all, with the volatility that we saw, that's not bad.
Not bad at all. And certainly good to see him. Kind of talked about it last week on your show, and I think it was important to kind of get that April contract into delivery and really force the buyers and sellers to come together and narrow that basis. And I think that's what we definitely saw this week, and hopefully we can get some continuation and the next week's trade. I think we saw a little bit of pressure here today just on the concern that we're headed into an extended weekend and there's still a lot of headline risk out there. If we can make it through the weekend without any, you know, terrible headline, that things continue to firm up, at the very least, see the interaction between the buyers and the sellers be a little bit more constructive. That basically meaning avoiding these limit moves on both sides that we've seen so many times over the last month and a half.
Yep, we certainly have. Real quick, Oliver, what are you going to be watching in the week ahead most closely?
You know, cattle, I really think they could firm up if we can chew through this weekend without any real negative news. And the one thing that I've been talking to about clients is the fact that, you know, everyone hates to say it, but it is a futures market. And the futures market was trying to price in the capacity disruptions month and a half ago, and it's still a futures market. So just because the bad news may not all be in front of us right now, the market is forward looking, and we could be potentially, you know, pricing in better news down the road before all the bad news is in front of us. And I think that's a silver lining to hang your hat on.
Gotcha, Oliver. We're going to keep track of that very closely. Thanks, buddy. Have a good weekend. Happy Easter to you. We'll talk to you next week. That's good stuff. Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Coming up next, we're going to talk S&Ds with Seth Meyer from University of Missouri. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields. AgriTalk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgrow, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. You really do. You really do. Hey, we got to keep this Agronomy Week celebration going with this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Nick McMicken. Excuse me there. Nick is a farmer in Alabama, and he's the Delta Pine NPE grower. Nick, how are things going this morning?
They're going very well. Hope things are well there, too.
Absolutely, they are. NPE, New Product Evaluator, right?
That is correct.
That's quite a responsibility for you there.
Well, it is. You know, it's to be honest with you, it's quite an honor to be chosen to do that. We consider it an elite status to be able to do that. But in 30 years of farming, we've been doing OVT trials with Auburn University and others. And the NPE program is the most thorough program to evaluate varieties in a real-world environment where you can not only get what happens on your farm, but you see it across the belt in differing weather conditions. So you can get a real evaluation with it and go in with confidence for the next year choosing your varieties.
That's outstanding, Nick. That is really cool. Thank you for doing it. I mean, it's got what you learn on your farm, it translates to other farms in your area down there, doesn't it?
But there's no doubt. Since 2008 and the inception of the NPE program, once my neighbors have found out about what we're doing with NPE, varieties like 1646 of late and 0912 was the first variety, but, you know, I get to see it firsthand, and so do my neighbors. So when 1646 came out, which is now the industry standard, you know, they come to me and want to know what did well in my plots. And so that weighs heavily on their decisions as to what they're going to plant the next year also.
You know, I'll bet it's interesting. I'll bet the truck traffic past your place is pretty heavy.
You know, it's we try to do this in an area where it is easily identified, whatever, and we have people coming from miles and miles away. They ride and visit these NPE plots because they want to see what it does, not only on my good soils, or sometimes I put them in different places and they want to see what my neighbors might be doing on theirs, you know. So it's a very, very popular place for people to visit and evaluate what they're going to do for the next year.
All right, Nick, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you.
That is Nick McMicken. He is a farmer down there in Alabama and a Delta Pine NPE grower. That's a New Product Evaluator. All right, really cool stuff there from Nick. Really appreciate that. Let's jump into the conversation here with Seth Meyer. Seth is an ag economist down at the University of Missouri, FAPRI, former chief of the World Ag Outlook Board and putting together the supply and demand reports. Joins us right now. Seth, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Good, good. Quite an unusually exciting April WASDE day. I'm not sure if exciting is the right word, but...
Right. Right. That's exactly where I was going to start, because normally for you, I would think April was kind of a yawner report. But boy, this year there were some changes like I don't recall being made in April.
Yes. Yeah. So I think the first thing we need to follow through is you were talking about futures before the break. You know, and the market's always very rational and is taking a look at what is put out relative to expectations. But when you see these numbers in print this April, they're pretty sobering in terms of the size, unprecedented adjustments that they're making on the demand side in what's usually a pretty staid month, kind of quiet, and you're really looking forward to May.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. When you get that first look at the new crop marketing year every year, the first official look from the World Ag Outlook Board, I think it's a lot of fun. Let's go to the corn S&D table here. I want to make sure that everybody's in tune with what's going on. Total supplies were actually cut 5 million bushels from last month. That's by way of smaller imports. Feed and residual up 150 million bushels to 5.675. Food, seed, and industrial use was cut 355 million bushels, and that includes the 375 million bushel cut to corn for ethanol use, which means that there was a 20 million bushel increase in other food, seed, and industrial use there, and we can talk about that. These are sweeping changes. The carryover up 200 million bushels from last month, up at 2.092 billion bushels. Seth, this ethanol situation, they cut 375 from it. I'm concerned that that there's more cuts coming.
Well, no, exactly. And that's why I was saying the futures market took a look at this and said, well, it could have been worse from USDA, right?
Right.
But that 375 million bushels is about a billion gallons. Okay. And remember, this is a marketing year, so this is only through September. Now, hopefully, we're back to driving more regularly by September, but I'll tell you, I've had the same tank of gas in my car for the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, that we're taking a very short-term, very sharp hit on motor fuel demand, which is translating directly into ethanol demand. I don't think we know how it turns out. I've seen numbers much higher than this from some other folks, and it really depends on how long these short-run impacts go on, because you won't get that back. You're just not going to get that back over the course of the marketing year.
Right. The latest data showed that the ethanol stocks were up over just over 27 million barrels. As I understand it, that's kind of full capacity. Seth, if we don't have any place to put the ethanol, we're looking at a dangerous situation here.
And I think you've already started, you know, some folks are saying, okay, we're going to go into maintenance mode, right? We're going to do our normal fall maintenance. We're just going to move it forward and do it now. If things turn around, we'll come back out. But the problem is if they don't come back around, those plants will go out for a long time. And again, that's demand that you're not going to recoup, because even if we kind of get back to driving, quote, more normal, right, that gasoline demand for the year is going to be way off.
Right. I've seen some of the estimates that, you know, on a daily, the daily average consumption, we've cut our gasoline consumption in half from where we were pre-COVID, right?
Yes, and I've seen some tax, looking at state tax information, bigger than that, more like 70%. And the question is, again, you know, is this for a couple more weeks, or does this hit us throughout the summer driving season? And because of the way that the domestic policy works, it's a quirk that, you know, you essentially roughly a percent less driving means a percent less ethanol that goes into the system. And those are miles you just don't make back. And so when they put out a billion gallon cut through this marketing year, you think on a calendar year basis, you know, could be bigger. Depends on how long this lasts.
Right. Okay. Now, that 200 million bushel increase in corn carryover could have been worse. I mean, we put 20 million bushels into the other food, seed, and industrial use. And then we added 150 million bushels to the feed and residual. And it's not like all of a sudden we've got that many more cattle, hogs, and birds on feed, or is it?
No, it's. I mean, there may be a small amount of that, but you're also looking at stock changes and implied use, and you knock 20 cents a bushel off of the price of corn here as well, too,
right,
within the marketing year. And that was the other shocker to me, which is, you know, they cut it to $3.60. Well, they do this based upon marketing weights, and we've already marketed 2/3 of the crop, which means that they're expecting we'll run the rest of this year about $3.35 a bushel.
Right.
And think about what that implies going into next year as well, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to get to next year, too. That cut to the corn for ethanol, it means fewer DDGs produced. What does that mean to the meal usage estimate over in the meal balance sheet?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, which is you're looking for the silver linings here where you say,
yeah,
okay, some of that's being used at the margin for meal use, out it goes. That's right. So, but it also means there's a lot more pure corn. Anything being fed corn, there's a lot more corn on the market there now as well, too, because it's not a grind. Right, so you're looking for the silver lining. Maybe meal is that silver lining.
Yeah, and we did put a record. Yeah, I think that's a record level crush estimate, isn't it? 2.125 billion bushels?
If not, it's pretty darn close. It's a good crush number.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
And beans responded pretty well, too, today, because you got another 3.5. You know, you cut Argentina and Brazil crop size by about 3.5 million metric tons. So the market says we'll take that as well, too. And so I think that's why. And again, you did see carry out go up by 55 million bushels.
Right.
But everybody, I think they look around and say, could have been worse.
Right, right. Yeah, I think we've uncovered a theme here, Seth. You know, the could-have-been-worse theme is shining through. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that wheat balance sheet, and then we're going to take a look out to the 2021 marketing year for corn, soybeans, and wheat. That's next on AgriTalk.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. China raises its corn import forecast, noting Phase 1 trade deal. China hiked its 2019-20 corn import forecast by 25%. Up a million metric tons. Brazil's corn exports slump in the first quarter. Beef and poultry shipments hold strong. Russian Ag Ministry maintains its grain crop estimate. Dryness is an increasing concern in Europe. Recent warm, dry weather across the bulk of Europe, and especially in Germany and Poland, is raising concern about stress to the wheat crop. The timeline on some initial farm aid, USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue said he wants to get COVID-19 aid to farmers and ranchers sooner rather than later, but does not have a date yet for action. Check out all that ProFarmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgrow, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. Let's do some more chasing the dream in this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Brandon Bruce, DeKalb Asgrow agronomist in Missouri. Brandon, welcome. Where exactly are you at in Missouri?
Southwest and West Central Missouri.
Very good, very good. Brandon, what's current conditions like right now? I know that guys were getting all fired up about it, but now this forecast for next week, it might be changing some plants, huh?
Many guys were just getting started planting this week. The last couple of days, really, conditions were really good. Soil temperatures were warming up and many fields were being planted. But yeah, the cool front coming with some rain, I think it's going to slow some guys down and see what the weather does.
All right, so very good. Once we get past those colder temperatures, what do guys need to keep in mind to get their crops off to a good start in 2020?
You know, the first thing that came to my mind was anhydrous application. I think separating that anhydrous with time or distance from the seed to try to help reduce that potential risk. Another would be weed. You know, make sure we have a good game plan. Last thing we want to do is try to get the corn in and then the weather change on us and set there and have some weeds coming up.
Brandon, the theme of Agronomy Week is chasing the dream. So as an agronomist, how are you chasing the dream?
Good question. Each year as I progress and develop, I feel like trying to share more information back. You know, there's been many in the industry help share information with me. And I think that's my goal, really, to try to share that information back with the seed agronomists, with the farmers we work with, and try to help listen to their programs, you know, help uncover some needs, and then try to, at the end of the day, try to provide some solutions to, you know, improve their success on their farms and operations.
Excellent, Brandon. Thank you so much. That is Brandon Bruce, DeKalb Asgrow agronomist in Missouri. All right, good stuff there. Hey, Davis, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed today.
Sure thing, Chip. Well, July hard red winter wheat was 13¾ cents higher, 4.99 even. July soft red gained 9 cents to 5.57½. May corn futures were 1¾ higher, 3.31¾. December corn closed at 3.50¾, up a penny and a half. May bean futures were 9 cents higher, 8.63½. Novi bean futures closed at 8.75¾. That one's up 7¾ today. April live cattle jumped 1.17½ to $94 even. April feeders fell 35 cents to 119.52½. And April lean hog futures 32½ cents lower, 42.80. There's your quick market recap, Chip. Back to it.
All right. Thanks so much. Seth Meyer from University of Missouri, FAPRI. Ag economist there is our guest analyst today. He's also the former chief of the World Ag Outlook Board at USDA, putting together the supply and demand reports. Seth, I said we were going to leave the corn balance sheet, and I can't. Not yet. The feed and residual is, what are the chances that at some time in the future we could see a feed category and a residual category instead of the combined?
You know, I think near zero, and there's some, and the reason for that is it's a hard thing to measure. It's a hard flow to measure. Are you going to go out? Are you going to check everybody's rations? You've got a wide diversity of folks feeding and using grain. I think the difficulty there, I think it's really difficult. I think you'd be more efficient to spend your time making sure you're getting stocks right, making sure you're doing area right, and letting it drop out. Now, I get the problem with it, right? Because that residual moves. It isn't just feed. It's feed and residual, and there's always this expectation that the residual moves with the size of the crop, right?
Yep.
I think from an efficiency standpoint, going back, making sure you get stocks right, working with folks for on-farm stocks and putting your money there, I think it's just from a management standpoint, tough to do feed.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about a NAS number there, National Ag Statistics number, and the stocks number. Just a side note before we get back to the S&Ds, the COVID-19 and the conditions that we're under right now, as far as the working conditions, is it going to have any impact on their survey work, do you think?
You know, NASA's, they're thinking ahead. You think most of their stuff's collected by phone, is collected by the internet. Now, there are some reports where they really do make a lot of in-face contacts. For instance, this upcoming June acreage report. Historically, that's been a lot of face-to-face. They'll have to adjust, but NASA always has to adjust to some extent. There's always some things going on. And then if they have if they say, hey, we have a little bit of a lack of confidence in this, they'll come back and they'll resurvey.
Right.
Kind of like we saw last year when they could, with all the prevent plant, well, we did June acreage, but let's go back and resurvey again and go back to those same folks to see what we got.
Okay. All right. Very good. Let's go over to the bean supply and demand balance sheet here. We talked about the crush number coming in up 20 million bushels from last month. That is a record, 2.125 billion bushels. They took 50 million bushels off the export number. Does that seem a touch aggressive or not?
Well, I don't think from where they kind of, to me, they kind of held on to that number for last month, despite some of the signals that they were getting. I just think when you look forward, in order to have hit that number they had before, you'd have had to have a record volume of exports every week for the rest of the year, practically. So to me, no. Now, could you still get a good number? You could still get a good number if the Chinese did come in and buy significantly. But it's getting, you know, you're pushing that weight on the back end of the year. I don't think that was too aggressive.
Okay, very good. They took 2 million off of the seed use number from 99 million down to 97 million. That's just a reflection of the prospective plantings report, right?
It is. That's your hint. Look at, not even a hint, right? It's just saying, here's what prospective plantings are, and we're going to make that seed adjustment into next year.
Right. Okay. Here's one. This has got to be driven by the stocks number somehow, some way, because they took 24 million bushels off of the residual, took it from what I would consider a fairly typical number at 29 million, but took it down to a low number at 5 million bushels of residual use on beans. Why?
Well, you're right. So you're trying to line it up with what you've got in stocks and what you're seeing with what else is going on in the balance sheet and trying to make it line up, right? Because this is one of the cases where, you know, your residual is truly your residual against all these other things you're examining, unlike corn where it's that feed and residual number.
Right. You know, lining up with those stocks reports, Seth, that had to be frustrating at times, didn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're sitting there going, well, we don't, you know, here's a stock number. What better information did we have than this? We don't always know, you know, NASA will tell you there's an error in this, and they'll even print what that historical error is. And you might feel like you know which way it's going to go. But when I was there, that was always a really dangerous thinking. You knew for sure if that was shaded wrong.
Right, right. Were you putting together the S&Ds when the negative residual use was in play in the bean sheet?
That was, yeah. I mean, you're trying to, my bean folks doing that. Yeah, you're trying to figure out okay, here's all the bits and pieces, and how is this kind of come together? And we think we know what it implies, but we're taking this number from somebody else, and you may know from NASA, and you may see which way it is likely to end up. But you know, you got to play with the statistics that you're getting as you step off and you look forward. NASA gives you a number, and then you take that number. You don't have to, but you know, what else do you have? And then you look forward. You get a negative residual. You say, it implies something about your expectation about another change coming down the road.
Right, right. Okay. I'm going to combine a couple of perspectives here with the corn and the bean sheet. Our total use for corn is down, obviously. Total use for soybeans is down. But yet we took that average price on corn down 20 cents and the average price on beans down a nickel from last month. I always cringe when I see that lower price along with lower total use, but this is a strange time that we're dealing with here.
Oh, absolutely. And what you're trying to do is balance, you know, so the price, the thing is your balance sheet says, where are we so far and where are we going to be? That price is in part influenced by what the futures market sees, but also marketing weights. But I think that there's no doubt that, you know, where cash prices were for corn forced them to push that much lower. And again, it's that ethanol impact.
Yep.
And it makes you wonder when you know, to wrap this around into prospective plantings, remember they were doing that prospective planting survey at the beginning of March when we were only getting when we were getting hints about where we're headed. But I think that ethanol decline has really taken hold. And you've seen that price ratio move a little bit. So it'll be interesting to me where we actually end up here in the March acreage report. I don't like to bet a lot against NASS. Things have moved. It'll be interesting to see.
Yep, very good. Real quick, over on the wheat balance sheet, you got your feed and residual down 15. You got, exports were, doggone it, exports were down 15, and that's where the 30 million bushel increase in the carryover came from. Both those numbers seem pretty reasonable to you?
Yeah, both those numbers seem pretty reasonable to me, and you know, you got that price bump as well, too. I mean, this is one of those interesting things in the COVID situation, which is going on, which is you've had this kind of, you know, we talk about softer prices for corn and beans and meat. That was something we can talk about more. But, you know, when you think about staple food grains, we've had a good run. You know, those futures markets are being driven on the world market where things aren't tight, but folks are starting to try and secure supplies.
Absolutely. Seth, I sure enjoyed the heck out of this. And you mentioned talking about the pork and beef supply and demand tables. We should do that before the next report comes out. Do a little preview work and take a look at the livestock S&Ds and get a better understanding of that. We'll have to do that. Thank you so much, Seth. You have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye. All right. That is Seth Meyer, ag economist down at the University of Missouri, FAPRI, and former chief of the World Ag Outlook Board. Davis and I are going to wrap it up next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
He's just such matter-of-fact, wasn't he?
He sounds handsome. I'm boogieing too hard to even listen right now.
I'm talking about Seth being so matter-of-fact.
Oh, Seth.
Yes.
Well, yes, he is very matter-of-fact. As a matter of fact.
Oh, wow. Great to talk to
Seth Meyer. Dude knows that report upside down, inside out, and backwards. Understands the process. And you know what's really a treat about this? If I can toot your horn just a little bit, man, you know it pretty well yourself.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that you were bringing up to him, I could tell he was like, wow. This we got one of them thinkers on the line here.
Yeah, whatever.
Nice work, buddy. Well,
been looking at him for 30 some years, man.
That's what I hear. Yeah,
yeah. No. And connecting the dots is part of the the process, and you've heard me use that word when it comes to USDA reports, and in particular the NAS reports, understanding the processes that take place in here. And when you see that the corn for ethanol number is down 375 million bushels, I'm not arguing that at all. But the thing is, what it does is it reduces the DDGs on the market. Therefore, you need to go ahead and jack up your crush to increase your meal production so that you can increase meal use going forward. It's everything. The ripple in one of these sheets can turn into a wave on another sheet. Mm-hmm. And it's important to watch that process and how they all connect. Can we go bigger picture here for just a couple of minutes?
Oh, let's do.
Okay, I want to talk about the global carryover estimates that we got from USDA today. USDA raised global corn ending stocks without China by 5.8 million metric tons from last month. So they're at 104.1 million metric tons. The bigger U.S. stocks are the primary reason there. Global stocks outside of China will still be down about 6.5 million metric tons from the previous marketing year, that being the 2018-19 marketing year. So month-on-month, up 5.8 million. Year-on-year, still down 6.5 million. So that's not a terrible situation for the global corn picture. But, you know, we've been working on a pattern in global corn consumption where it has been outpacing global corn production for the last 3 years. We were projecting out to a fourth year. Well, the ethanol problems are going to threaten that as we look forward. Over on soybeans, USDA cut global soybean ending stocks outside of China to 77.7 million metric tons. That's down 3 million metric tons from last month. Now, that's despite the 55 million bushel increase in U.S. ending stocks. But USDA lowered its 2019-20 production estimates for Brazil by 1.5 million metric tons. And that's down to 124.5 million metric tons in Argentina by 2 million metric tons, down to 52 million metric tons. So that was the drop in global stocks outside of China is because of the a smaller supply coming into the market. On the wheat side of thing, USDA increased global wheat carryover outside of China by nearly 3.6 million metric tons. World new crop wheat stocks without China are now expected to rise 4.1 million metric tons from 2018-19. So up month on month, up year on year there now. And real quick, just take a look at the situation in cotton. The old crop cotton carryover estimate for the U.S., the domestic number, that was increased 1.6 million bales from last month. It's now up at 6.7 million bales. Exports were cut 1.5 million bales down to 15 million. Domestic use cut 100,000 bales down to 2.9 million bales. And USDA noted in that a developing global economic slowdown with little precedence is expected to significantly reduce global cotton demand and trade. So talking about that, that's one of the times where they really mentioned COVID. They also mentioned it in their notes on the corn S&D, talking about the 375 million bushel cut to the corn for ethanol number. Globally on cotton, USDA raised global cotton carryover without China by 7.1 million bales from last month. That puts it up at 56 million bales. World stockpiles outside of China are now expected to jump expected to jump 11.4 million bales from last year. That's no fun at all, dude. No fun at all. Real quickly, National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook for April 15th through the 19th has got below normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt. Below normal. below normal precipitation is expected all the way from the Canadian border down into far northeast Kansas, northern Missouri, northern half of Illinois. Most of Michigan is included in that. And, of course, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa expected to see that below normal precipitation in the 8 to 14 day. This is for April 17th through the 23rd. Those below normal temperatures stick around, no question about that, for the Corn Belt. And the below normal precipitation kind of pushes back to the northwest a little bit, but it's still got most, it's got a lot of northeast Kansas in it, northern Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, the Dakotas, Minnesota, and most of Wisconsin included in that area that's expected to see below normal precipitation.
Okay. Geez, I hope we can find enough to talk about next week, you know?
Dude.
Just anything to talk about, just to keep the show going.
This news cycle that we are on is unbelievable, and we're going to keep it going Monday morning. Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen is going to be on, talk about some of the CARES Act provisions for agriculture. We'll talk to Machine Repeat as well. That's on Monday morning. Tomorrow morning, it's a free-for-all. Wiesmeyer, Johnson, and Haney. And tomorrow afternoon, Chris Barron, AgView Solutions on AgriTalk.